Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
That wasn't, that wasn't great. Jerry, I'm watching up, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't great.
Jerry,
you were in a great fight. Okay.
I don't know. I thought that was a great fight. Jerry really turned a lot of hits. I think he showed a little flash of power, and you know, the guy was coming off the bench, but still, I mean, he was world champion. The big story was the guy gained 19 pounds between the weigh-in and the fight.
Sanders has a win over Margarita. I don't know if Margarita's scores are loaded or not, but that's not the even a point. But the undercard fights were okay. They were competitive. They weren't barn burners. Well, you know, they were good enough to keep interest. So let's talk about the main event. And first thing I gotta say is the tornado is back.
Ninth round. Manny was trying for you.
We're watching up. You know, I'm gonna say, stop the fight. Stop the fight. Because it was right at 145. So, if you go back and you read my online report, I came out and said Cotto was gonna open up using boxing. Because draw Pacquiao in. And Pacquiao seemed a little bit cautious at first, and then Pacquiao started to find his range in the second. Now, I didn't call the knockdowns in the third and the fourth. But, I kind of saw that's when the tide would start turning because of Pacquiao's speed and movement, and Cotto would try to start winging them body shots, but he just wouldn't be able to keep them trapped.
Right.
And then I could just see Cotto's face getting busted up, and then, the three or four punches from Pacquiao every one Cotto could throw being the main difference.
I thought it was very interesting. I didn't really see the third round knockdown coming. It was kind of a flash knockdown, but it still doesn't take away from Manny's power or anything. But the fourth round, I think, was the most interesting round of the fight. I watched it again today. And, you consider it's the halfway point, the middle of the fourth round. Actually, the middle of the fifth round would be the halfway point to the ninth round, So, but with about a minute left, you notice, about 10 seconds left of the fourth round, you see Pacquiao start to just go into guard against the ropes. And he's letting Miguel Cotto just come at him with everything. Cotto connects with maybe one or two good punches, and he comes in with a straight right hand, or no, a right hook. Cotto comes over with a right hook as Manny's deciding to come off the ropes and move forward again. And he gets clipped, and you see Manny nod his head, and he gives him credit for it. And that's the last time you see him do that. And next time you see either one of them give him credit, it's Cotto, I think it was after the ninth round or the tenth round, and he's like, gives him a tap on the cheek as the bell goes, after the bell goes. But it was interesting because right after that moment where he gives him the acknowledgement, that's when he starts to come forward. It's like he purposely wanted to let him slug himself out and then go on a tear. And, there was nothing stopping him from knocking him out at that point. And at one point, he just baited him right into a slugging match so that the reach was negatable. Because really, the only good round for Cotto was the first. And Cotto used his reach, he used his jab, he used his movement. And then the only other time he used his movement, the rest of the fight was really to run. And
it was almost like a survival move by that point.
In fact, after the fight, I wanted to take his punches. I wanted to be able to feel his power and know what it was like. And he did that through four rounds, felt him out. And then right around that halfway point, he just decided, all right, this is where I'm going to turn it on. And, that was just a tremendous, it was like a left hook that turned into an uppercut. Because it looked like he changed mind halfway through. And I noticed on the slow-mo, he actually glanced off Cotto's glove when he came up under it, and then it came up and just tagged him on the chin, off the cheek a little bit. Just boom, that was just a beautiful punch. Cotto, I don't think ever recovered fully from that.
And one thing, I was talking to a friend of mine tonight, he's the one that has to watch the fight in a club somewhere, and he didn't want me to go with him, but I still was a little bit under the weather, and I just kind of wanted to sit at home and watch with my dad, because he and I were really getting into him. He started throwing, our commentary back and forth to each other, that he's got like vision like I got. Like, you see something, you say, oh, I can see where he's trying to set this up. Well, with Pacquiao, it's hard to do that, and as I was telling my friend Steve tonight, because he is so lot of fighters, and I said, and for me myself, you know, being the person has trained, has fought, and has trained others, has been there as an official, as a referee, as a judge, you normally see punches come from your standard angles, your straight jab, your straight right hand, sometimes more of a right cross, an overhand right with a pitcher winding up, rolling one, because so, and your uppercuts, that's a big deal. Punches come from a variety of angles. And that's what's going to make it tough on the guy. Because Floyd has such great defense, but you got to see, Floyd is used to fighting guys that throw conventional punches. And you can pick them all up because you know where they're coming from. Pacquiao, you don't know where they're coming from. You know, his first knockdown was he stepped over to the right for a right hook, and kind of caught Cotto behind the ear. Then he hit him with like a left uppercut with the forehead. The second knockdown was he stepped right in between his guard, and he threw a something uppercut with the same blade a little bit, but they caught Cotto flush with the chin, never saw it coming. That's what makes Pacquiao so difficult, because you don't know where he's going to hit you.
Right. He doesn't decide to come in on you, you know. It was like he was willing to take that one punch to land six.
And yeah, exactly. That's why I said it. By the middle round, Pacquiao's going to get in that rat attack mode, and he's going to start throwing three or four punches every one Cotto's going to throw. And I remember when Pacquiao beat Dana White last year, and once he really started getting full control of that fight, and he was back at Dana White up, because he was throwing Cotto. At one point, he threw a triple left hand. On the first one, like, a straight left, right down the side, he threw Dana White, right in the mouth. And he hopped it, and hit him with an uppercut to the solar plexus. Then he pulled that back, and threw, he threw like a wide, or it was a top left hand. So he threw three straight left hands in a matter of maybe 3 seconds. No, not even that, like in a matter of maybe 2.5 seconds. And they all landed in, like, different spots. How hard is that to guard? I'll tell you right now, it's very hard to guard.
Yeah,
it's like, what am I going to get hit next?
Reminded me of those kids that win those cup stacking competitions, you know, they see like one stack of cups and then all of a sudden they're in a pyramid. You're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
How'd that kid do that that fast? That's how many punches. You know, it's like blinding speed, literally. And it's kind of a little bit like Roy Jones Jr. in his prime without the swagger, you know? He's got a sort of boxing shell to go with it, so it was interesting to see him go in his little cocoons and then come out at the right time. And, you know, you can tell, it's a lot of it's training, because you can see how he's developed an ability to sense things, you know, like, you know, this is when this guy's going to get tired, and he knows when to go against this trainer. I guess they were saying, you know, Freddie Roach must be going nuts because he's standing up against the rope taking punishment. But, you know, it was actually Freddie Roach said he was going to, he picked the ninth round. So I was wondering if you knew that or not before you did your prediction. But they said that there was
my prediction.
Yeah, that's what happened. The ninth round comes along, and, man, he just had all kinds of reserves, and the big thing was the confidence that he had, you know. Like I said, he gave him that one point of credit, and from then on, really, he was just asking for more, and that was a very intimidating fight, you know, in style to go in against Cotto with, because Cotto is like, you know, notorious for, you know, being a devastating body puncher, and here's a quick guy you can't get to the body, so, you know, it was just a matter of time before Pacquiao was able to adjust to his style and beat him on speed. But he's also got this power behind that speed you can't beat. And it was kind of sad to see Cotto try to keep asking for another round at the end of the fight.
So, yeah.
You know, that ninth round really killed his spirit.
Yeah, you can answer. I mean, he was going on a shield. I was talking to a friend of mine today, and he was saying, like, his wife, she wasn't better than what she was pulling for him. He goes, oh, man, I'm not going to let him build the last 2 rounds, or the last 2 minutes. And I said, they shouldn't let him build the last 2 rounds. I said, Kenny Britt was willing to stop that fight. Remember one time they went in the corner, and he was like, yeah, we want to continue. He was like, yeah, sure, come on. And he tried to say, come on, well, let me stop it, guys. I'm not going to want to go out. And I like Miguel Cotto, very classy guy, very soft-spoken. He fights his heart out to like, you can say nothing bad about him as a fighter and as a role model for, you know, young fighters. throwing all the names in the mix, and Zeke had the mix was, you know, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, you know, Cotto was still in there, and the guy like Cotto, he struggles the most against guys that really press him a lot. That's why. And guys that, you know, either are faster than him, as Pacquiao was, or guys that are more physical than him, such as Margarito was. Now, like I said, I'm not going to get into the loaded thoughts. That's, you know, not part of my question. But now, so please, what would happen if Cotto, say, had won and was fighting Mayweather? I think Cotto would have a better chance against Mayweather than he would against Pacquiao. Pacquiao brought the fight to Cotto, and Pacquiao used his hands to land offensively three or four punches. Mayweather would have tried to counter, so he would have given Cotto opportunity to throw his own punches. So Cotto would have been able to get more body shots off. I think Mayweather likes to get that shell and do that shoulder roll. So he would give Cotto the opportunity to throw some punches and maybe land them on his, you know, say his arms or. And those punches, you know, will, you know, take their toll. So, like I said, I think Cotto would have had a better chance against Mayweather. That's not taking anything away from Mayweather. That's not putting Pacquiao more of a pedestal. Not taking anything away from Cotto. That's just how styles make fights. I think the Cotto Mayweather fight would be, excuse me, a Pacquiao Mayweather fight would be very interesting because it's going to be a clash of styles. You know, Pacquiao's going to want to come in. Now, you look at his struggles when he fought Marquez. Marquez is a natural counterpuncher. Marquez was very ineffective against Mayweather. Number one, he just didn't have the size to compete with him. And number two was was forced into the role of being the aggressor, and that's how Marquez likes to fight. He liked, that's why he was so great against Juan Diaz, was he let Diaz come to him, and then he started picking him apart. He had to go to Mayweather, and that just didn't work for him.
Right.
And Pacquiao is going to want to bring it to Mayweather, so he's going to be naturally in his role of aggression. So it's going to be, can Pacquiao rat-a-tat-tat Mayweather? Or is it Mayweather's natural counterpunching ability going to foster Pacquiao like Pacquiao was had struggles against Marquez?
Well, I noticed that Cotto had a very head-down defensive style. And Mayweather, on the other hand, is a head-up behind-the-shoulder style. So
yep.
It's going to be a very different defensive fight because Pacquiao, you noticed in the beginning of that fight, not doing so well. He was just kind of really adjusting to the style at first, and then he became very defensive himself, you know. But he still was able to counterpunch with such power that he was able to get that first knockdown, and then he was able to kind of flip the script in the middle rounds and turn the tide. And Mayweather's that type of guy too. If he's in trouble early, he's going to adjust. So I think definitely going to be a decision. Whatever happens, it's going to go all the
adjustments against Mayweather when they pull in Ricky Hatton.
And, you know, I don't think he has the kind of power to knock Pacquiao out. If Cotto couldn't knock him out with some of the hooks that he landed flush, I mean, that one that Pacquiao gave him credit for in the fourth, that must have pissed him off, too. And that rattled him. It hit him right on the bridge of the nose there. Yeah. And he was wanting more. Kept, you know, banging his gloves together and, you know, indicating to his chest, you know, hit me in the body, hit me in the head, whatever. He wanted more. So I don't think Mayweather, I know Mayweather has nothing in his arsenal, no kind of power that's going to knock Pacquiao out, even though he's in a ditch right now.
Mayweather would be able, I mean, like I said, I'm not, you know, Mayweather on the pedestal, I'm not, you know, downplaying Cotto at all. But this is Mayweather. We're talking about the fight, not inside yet. But Mayweather would have to fight the first time. If you're saying like he stopped Ricky Hatton, was getting the guy coming forward and then just landing a shot that he doesn't see. I think Pacquiao saw everything that Cotto was throwing at him, so he was, you know, once the heel see it, knock him out, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's,
I didn't really analyze the tape too deeply, but I think you might notice that mostly jabs were landed, you know,
Cotto.
was maybe when they have this kind of team that could put together a plan that could beat Pacquiao. You know, Freddie Roach has put together so many plans to beat so many different people.
Exactly.
You gotta go with him.
I talked to Freddie Roach, and he said he doesn't as much look for things that he doesn't analyze mistakes. Like, because everybody makes mistakes. So he feels like too much. Kind of just like Margarito and say, oh, kind of dropped his left hand this one time, or kind of made this one mistake. He made these things. I analyze tendencies. A mistake you can make one time. Because a tendency you can run over and over and over again. And that's what we have to explain. That's a really good point. So, I mean, and Rich, I'm going to beat the drum again. You know I am not a fan of Roger Mayweather as a trainer, as a person. Like I said, I don't think he wants to use the bad guy. He likes to play the bad guy role. But I really do think that his father, Floyd Sr., and his uncle, Roger, are both scumbags. And I think they're,
How about Manny Pacquiao's father? Huh? How about Manny's father being there for the first fight that he's ever seen his son? There's a new role model we could use. Manny's dad. We'd like to see more of him. Rather than Floyd's dad. That was pretty
interesting. Here's what happened. I mean, a guy like, watch that fight, Rich. When Miguel Cotto was losing, and it was evident, he was, going to be the losing end of this fight, could you honestly, sit down and say anything bad about him?
About Cotto?
Not Cotto.
Yeah, I mean, did you say anything bad about him?
He
criticized his technique, but I mean, you gotta give him everything, all the credit for stepping in there and having the heart to try to keep going.
Five quick quality boards.
Out of the hospital. You know, Dana's saying this shit about him.
in the first interview I saw quoted by Dana White about this situation, Dana says flat out Brock didn't even want anybody to know about it. And he does not respect his own fighter's privacy and goes out there and makes a big fucking news spectacle out of this. I mean, do you think that guy is going to want to fight for the UFC if he does come back? I mean, think about it. This is a very private guy. He lives in the fucking mountains on a ranch somewhere out in fucking Wyoming or some shit. I don't know. He doesn't like, he goes hunting, you know, for days at a time out in the wilderness. You know, he's a very quiet guy. Why would he want Dana White going out there slapping his gums about this shit, you know? If it's mono or the flu, you know, whatever. You know, whatever the condition is, you can tell people, but you don't have to go out and say he's clean for life and all this other shit, even if it's true. If the guy doesn't want people to know, then don't fucking tell people. What is your problem, dude? And then it's like, that's one of the things I really want to go off on later, is he just does not realize that how much he's shitting on his own talent. You know, these are people that he is responsible for bringing to the table, too, which makes it worse. It's like, you know, you're talking about this bum thing that Floyd Sr. does all the time. Oh, he's a bum, and he's a bum. Rick, you know? Yeah, Scott, you're there.
Hey.
How do you do that?
I'm sorry about that.
How do you do that? I've been listening to this conversation for the last, I don't know, 3 months or so,
I didn't realize you were there.
Rick Lesnar lives in a rural suburb of the greater Minneapolis area.
There you go.
He is a quiet sort. He does like his privacy. When he does go on a microphone and when he does go in public, he usually goes WWE on everybody, and that's not his true character. But right now he's suffering. He has a hole in his intestine, which is pretty severe. We don't know how it arrived or how it got there, diverticulitis or what have you, but Brock has started in serious condition at home, recuperating under a doctor's care. I have no idea why Dana feels the need to go public other than to defend his position publicly that he is not prepared to fight, but he's not prepared to fight.
Right.
You know, I don't know what Dana's overall objective is, but certainly the fight between Brock Lesnar and Shane Carwin is not going to happen right now. If it happens in the spring, summer, fall, or if ever, that's a real good question. Does Brock Lesnar need the money? No.
Right.
It seems
that there's a lot of injuries across the landscape of the UFC at a time when Dana White just goes on the Ultimate Fighter, the last episode, and he's railing on this attitude of pulling out of fights when you're not prepared, you know, already or medically clear.
Well, public perception is sometimes different than private reality.
Right. So, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. But Scott Casper, everybody, on the phone with us, and you're the wrestling expert, so tell us what's going on in the wrestling world, too.
Well, I'll tell you, we just finished with Team USA versus Russia, and it took place last night in Mount Vernon, Iowa, at Cornell College, in front of a packed house. You could not get a seat. It was a sold-out event, and it was truly a wonderful event. It was Dan Gable and Mark Ironside, and trying to remember my primary talent were on air, doing a great job. The thing is, Team USA, very young and very inexperienced on the international scene, but it was, in fact, our young guys that turned into stellar performance. Russia has a great team, there's no doubt about it. The international scene is alive and well. They'll be wrestling again tomorrow in New York, and then again on Sunday in New York for a couple big events at the New York Athletic Club. So there's a lot going on in the world of wrestling. Saturday is the Fullerton Open in Fullerton, California. I'll be there for that with Mark Munoz. And then on Sunday, also on Saturday in Omaha, Nebraska, almost 1,600 matches will be wrestled, I think the number is, and that'll be between 7 a.m. and midnight at the Kauffman Brand. On Sunday, we have the All-Star Classic, just one of the wrestling events going on, and that'll be at Fullerton as well, as we attempt to raise some money for Cal State Fullerton so they can stay in the wrestling business. They have to raise $200,000, as it says, the institution, in order for them to be financially viable and to remain one of the few colleges in the state of California to offer wrestling to the state's some 30,000 wrestling kids.
How do you boil that down to five college programs when there may be, well, 10 spots for sure on every team, but how do you boil that down to maybe 30 spots on each roster at each school? That's unconscionable.
I wonder why it is
batting running across the country. How is it that California's dropping programs is beyond me?
Yeah, I wonder, too. There was just a news story tonight. I saw that one school was raising tuition by $2,500 a year out there in California. I've noticed a lot of schools are actually deciding to put wrestling on the chopping block. Out of all other sports, I don't understand why wrestling is the first.
Well, we've actually seen that change, Rich. We've seen wrestling now become the savior for many small schools to raise enrollment among males. We're seeing a declining enrollment among adult males, or just among the adult males anyway, that have decided to go to college. We're seeing about a 60-40 split female-male. So the smaller schools, like we just had in our first four-year college in Georgia, we just had in our first four-year college in Texas, we just had in another school in Ohio, we just had a couple in Kansas, we just had another one in North Dakota, three in Iowa last year. So we're seeing growth, but it's at the NAIA level, the D3 level, and those guys are pushing the D2 and D1, so we're seeing D1 holding relatively firm at 85. 85 programs were once through 360-some programs. D2 has leveled off and is starting to grow again, so we're starting to see wrestling grow again. Not maybe where we want to see it ultimately, but eventually we will get back. And so wrestling is enjoying a resurgence because of mixed martial arts, and we're grateful.
Yeah, I noticed that, of course. I like to interject every now and then the fact that the guy from Iowa came out there and started coaching Penn State, since Tony's a Philadelphia resident.
I'll tell you what.
Well, he didn't have good luck his first time out. I heard they lost their first match, but my wrestling coach used to always say, hey, you know, if you lose and learn something, it's better than winning any day of the week.
That's the bottom line. And Gale Sanderson did not go to Penn State from Iowa State expecting to win right out of the box. The reality of it is he's got an incredible class, maybe one of the best classes of athletes coming in next fall, but they're still in high school wrestling. We still have kids that just got to campus, so they're in their redshirt year. So we won't see the wave of Penn State success until next year or even the year beyond that when we see what we call an unstoppable train. And even then, Iowa, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Minnesota, Michigan, Old Dominion, Virginia, all these programs, Cornell, are all on the rise. The level of competitive attitude out there is incredible right now. My God, when was the last time you saw a program that was so competitive like Cornell be number 3 in the early rankings, and deservedly so, and they've been consistently in the top 5 and the top 10 for the last 5 years? But it's incredible, and that's just, I think, is a testament to how difficult wrestling has gotten and how talented our youth are out there at the collegiate ranks.
I don't know if you caught us, but I forget what team it was. It might have even been the Patriots, but remember there was a football game this weekend where they mentioned there was a guy on the team who might beat Brock Lesnar in wrestling.
I watched the game. I want the Patriots game.
Yeah,
it was. It was a guy named Stephen Neal. He wrestled at Cal State
Bakersfield.
And he threw Brock around like a ragdoll. And Stephen was a very big guy. I mean, he didn't wrestle or play a down of college football. And he walked onto the New England Patriots tryout team. And he amazed the coaches with his balance, with his style, his ability, his class. And quite frankly, you know, we need more guys to cross over to football because these big guys, there's a kid last night that wrestled for Team USA, Division III national champion, and his name is escaping me, Blake Gillis, and he is easily as big as Brock Lesnar, easily, just not as well-muscled. Maybe he's not pharmaceutically enhanced or whatever, but
I have a theory about that. I'm sure you'll love
it. Well, yeah, but he's not pharmaceutically enhanced in any way, shape, or form, but this kid threw the Russian around, and he was able to drop down and grab a single, drop down and grab a double, and control the Russian like I've never seen since Roland Gardner did. And, when he wrestled, and I'm not going to say he threw around Alexander Krylov, because that's not at all the case, It was a great match, but Alexander was definitely the aging veteran, and Ruhlin was the young upstart no one had heard much about. So, Ruhlin Gardner, by the way, just opened a brand new MMA gym and training center in Utah, which is a Cadillac of a gym. Oh, my, is this fun.
Got him to
Cincinnati Arrows coach for another half a year. But the two guys that got him started, one was Steve McNally, who's now the head boxing coach at the U.S. Naval Academy.
Right.
And the other guy is Gary Rosado, who's now a professional boxing referee and judge. And he's judged actually a couple title fights now. Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Delaware, that jurisdiction. So two guys, two young 18-year-old kids want to start a boxing program and look at where it's taking them.
Well, I was involved in boxing for so long as an announcer, as a ring announcer, and then moved into the cage. But doesn't boxing deserve another chance? It deserves the first chance, and that is to be have the ability to clean itself up and tell Don King and Aramid and the rest of that, you'll get out. Boxing it'll continue to be a veritable alphabet soup of organizations that are not cohesive, that do not work with each other, and don't have a chance at all of unifying. So in that, what credibility does one championship have over another? It's another belt, it's another title, it's another potential pay-per-view, but there's only so many Manny Pacquiao's, there's only so many Floyd Mayweather's, and if they don't have them, if you guys put Tyson back together with King, it's not the answer. How much more money can King squeeze out Tyson? It just, boxing, there's no, there is an end of its brilliance that wasn't shown brightly, and I think we can actually see it from where we're sitting today. Has MMA helped to kill boxing? Boxing killed itself. MMA was just an answer to a group of rabid fans that wanted to see action and purity. I think we see that. I don't care what you think about Brandon Vera and Randy Couture last weekend in England. I mean, believe me, I thought Randy was in his best fight. He knows that. He didn't get to exercise what he worked on, but it was two wrestlers going at it. Two guys that had international aspirations at one time and now are competing for big money. Now you've got Jacob Volker, another great wrestler, a former Minnesota golfer, going into mixed martial arts and making a rich name for himself. You've got a ton of guys that are Arizona State following in the footsteps of Don and Dan Severn. There's a wave of guys. These guys, a lot of guys, by the way, are joining me Sunday at the All-Star Classic. I was shocked when Randy said, I guess I'll be seeing you Sunday. And I said, where are we going to see each other? He said, I'll be at the College of Open to support Coach Dan Hicks, or rather the All-Star Classic, to support Dan Hicks at Fullerton. And I said, that's terrific news, because we need the stars from wrestling that came out of wrestling that are now mixed martial arts to come back. Wrestling has been slow to embrace mixed martial arts for fear of losing our greatest athletes. And it's a sin.
We had talked about a few weeks ago. There was actually a wrestling coach that
opened his arms and embraced mixed martial arts instead of fearing it. Why not get on that train and say, hey, these guys can do more to help us than hurt us?
I'm sure you heard about a few weeks ago there was a story of a coach who took it a little too much to heart. His wrestling coach actually had MMA fights on the school grounds, and the kid lost a tooth in the fight. Ended up suing the school.
But we have to be responsible, Richard.
We do have to be responsible.
I've never
wanted to be at that devotional level.
Incredibly smart.
But it's interesting that that's even a possibility in this landscape that would happen.
It is, but then again, we've had boxing, we've had teachers organize contests between two young people to settle their differences. Teachers make bad decisions all the time. They're human. They're teachers. They get caught up in the excitement of the kids, too. And maybe there are some coaches that fancy themselves a Dana White or Joe Rogan or whoever they look at in the world of mixed martial arts or television and say, I want to be that guy. I hope there's not too many guys that want to be Dana out there, but you never know.
It's funny that you mentioned boxing because, coming from a boxing background myself, and I found it hard to believe Tony was sitting still for that. He loves his boxing. He's the boxing guy on the show. We call him the boxing rain man. But what I wanted to point out, I was going to talk about it a little bit later when I furthered my thoughts on Dana White, but my big observation lately, especially in the UFC, is that I think that these two sports of boxing and MMA are just not seeing eye to eye, and they're not taken from each other, the same as wrestling and MMA are starting to do a little bit, you know. We'd like to see more on both levels, but if you noticed, especially the tough episode there, I mean, the whole season, these are the best heavyweights that, you know, the UFC wants to take a look at and take for a test drive to see if they're going to be able to fight on the big stage. And these guys cannot box.
Hang on, this may be breaking news for you. It's all the wall. I'm going to play you on hold. Okay, stand by.
All right.
Does he have a 515 number?
Yes, he does, I think.
Okay. I'm making a call tonight from selling expensive material. He's one piece merchandise. And I had a call, from 515. I think that's when Scott was trying to get back on ours because he was ringing my phone for some reason. So did you start calling me from 515? That's Iowa.
Des Moines, yeah. He's in Des Moines. Des Moines, as the locals call it. Yes, what were we talking about?
Are you there?
Yep, we're here. So what I was just going to say is that, you know, these guys at the highest levels of MMA, you know, supposed to be the best prospects at heavyweight to go into the UFC, and they can't box, you know? So many fights have come down to they're falling apart at the end of it. They got nothing left in their arms. And, you know, these guys are the guys that are supposed to be the best, and they're supposed to be conditioned to fight MMA, and they cannot box. I noticed it on a local level and an international level.
It isn't that listen. I mean, we all know, and you guys know this firsthand, is that boxing is where you get your conditioning. Okay, Foster will tell you that, no matter who the boxing coaches are, but they will tell you. And if you want to get in shape, you go and learn how to box. Boxing will get you cardiovascular, your upper body. It'll get your speed, your endurance, your hand-eye coordination. It gets all these things answered, but it's up to the individual and his coaches to put it all together. That was the Mola Wall. Mola Wall has turned from an incredible athlete in wrestling to a very good mixed martial artist. He is, however, a star in Japan. He is a very big star in Asia. But here's the problem. He's not a huge star over here. He will be with us. He just told me he will be with us on Sunday in Fullerton. If there are fans out there that want to come by and meet him and get his autograph, when they're at these wrestling events, unlike boxing, when they're at wrestling events, they are then one with the crowd. There's no wall. There's none of this no touching, don't talk directly to me, any of this bullshit that we see, you know, in boxing events where you can't approach Floyd Mayweather or whoever because he's got his puffy. But these guys become wrestlers anyway. So Baltimore will be at the All-Star Classic. It starts at 2:00 Pacific time in Fullerton. We will be broadcasting a little bit of a plug there. So boxing, hell yeah, that's where you get your cardio. Couture will tell you that.
Couture is one of the last guys in MMA who really dominates when he decides to box.
If you notice the age differential, okay, and here's my point. Randy Couture, any other fighter out there that started in wrestling and had a deep career in wrestling will always drop down to what that sense says to do, and that is to go to what your strength is. Well, Randy Couture is a wrestler. So he was wrestling until he was 31, 32 years old on the international scene, or at least working out at the Olympic Training Center. Can you fault his body, his mind, his soul for going back to what he does best? I can't. But I tell you what, I don't want to get hit by Randy Couture. I don't want to get hit by Chuck Liddell, Ortiz, any of the guys that wrestle. I swear to God, I don't.
Yeah, another wrestler tried to shine in the WEC the other night, a guy that went to my alma mater, Mike Brown. Got floored by Jose Aldo. I don't know if you caught that, but I like to tell everybody on the show that Jose Aldo is the reason why I will never try MMA.
Do you believe that Joe Soto, do you believe that Cain Velasquez, do you believe that John Bones Jones, do you believe that any of those guys are great boxers or not? I'll tell you. But your job in mixed martial arts is to go in and dominate the fight any way that they can, using the tools in their arsenal, in their toolbox, and beat their opponent. That's what they're hired to do. That's what they're paid big money to do. That's why the fans love them. Do we fault them because they can't box? No, they fault themselves because they can't box. That's why they train on boxing every single day.
Yeah. Well,
I hope the hard conversation blows. I'm sorry.
No. It just seems like, you know, when the UFC is trying to put on a good face there with this heavyweights episode, and Dana White is out there saying these are great fights when these guys are gassed out at the end and they're barely throwing even shots that look like they're connecting.
Who's the big guy? I've announced two of his fights from Florida.
Kimbo?
No. The great big guy from Florida. Great big guy.
Marcus
Jones.
The football player?
Right. He's a former NFL football player. And I think I announced his first pro fight, his third pro fight. Down in...
They didn't really hype him too much at the beginning.
Well, what's the hype? I mean, his skill is obvious. He's big.
Yeah.
Okay, I announced pro basketball. I announced pro football. This man is big. I mean, he towers over me in the cage. Towers over me.
It's funny, though. He's afraid
a
of a little
fox. His hand is the size of a Mack truck. Okay? It's like Shane Carwin's hand is huge. It's bigger than Brock Lesnar's hand.
Well, I've noticed that they get sued by somebody who got injured on the show. They've cut down on the house destruction.
Oh, yeah.
One of the funny episodes was when Marcus Jones got confronted with a little spider on the ground. And was, you know, a pretty decent-sized spider, but he was so afraid of the thing. It was funny.
Who in the world of professional wrestling was definitely afraid of spiders, and he had an enormous size? There's your quiz for you. You can say it again.
Yokozuna
is absolutely
right. Yeah, Tony's a big pro wrestling guy. I actually wanted to talk about pro wrestling because there's a lot of developments going on.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's go there.
I read an article today, or actually last night, about superstar Billy Graham coming out really criticizing Vince McMahon's wife for trying to run for the Senate and for the overall downturn new emphasis on family-friendly television for an organization that's, you know, known for steroid use. And, you know, there was an interesting observation by him that you don't ever see any blood anymore. They cut out blood completely from the pro wrestling.
Okay. Well,
Hulk Hogan, you're going to get one half of the Nasty Boys, you're going to get Jimmy Hart.
part, you're going to get all these Hulk Hogan hanger honors that are part of the show, but have we seen enough of it?
I think that the one thing that I was reading about recently was due to the damages to his right hip. He said he can't even really do the leg drop anymore. I said, well, Hulk Hogan can't do the leg drop. What is he going to do?
He'll get all hulked up, get hulkified, if you will. Oh my God, I almost went up to Dusty Rhodes back here. he's a son of a plumber from the other side of the tracks, you know what I'm talking about, my brother. If Dusty Rhodes can take that hulking egg shaped frame of his and still work it with cowboy boots on and still turn a good trick in the middle of the ring. Why can't Hulk Hogan, if he needs to get his hip fixed, for God's sake, get his hip fixed? I've seen Dan Gable most recently, Steve Martin, and Ultimate, and have that hip shaved. It's a painful operation. But by God, they get it done, and they're walking upright again.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the WWE going with all these celebrities hosting events? I guess now Jesse Ventura is the next guy that they're talking about bringing in.
Bringing Jesse back is, Jesse, it's not a dumb idea. Jesse's one of the most intelligent men to ever come from wrestling, one of the most arrogant men I've ever interviewed. But then I don't take anything away from him because he knows, that which he speaks of. So I'm not discrediting the guy, but I don't think he's the answer to the ratings woes in the WWE. I don't think sex is. I think good storylines, instead of having two or three matches an hour, let's get down to it. Let Iron Mike Stark come back and load up his own arm and yell a little bit, bring back George Animal Steel, bring back characters that people cared about, or reinvent them with younger talent. Where's the Hillbilly? Where's Hillbilly Jim when we need to bring it on his guitar and his pig? Where is the British Bulldog with his Bulldog Matilda? Where is Coco Beware, for God's sake? Where are the talent that got us excited? I mean, let's not forget Liberace. Let's not forget all the I mean, they all got involved. So are they reinventing? A little bit, sure. What you see today's modern day celebrity is not necessarily negative for Vince McMahon. It's grasping at straws. I don't think so. I think he's just using another tool, another device. It is, after all, fellas, entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Just think that an Iron Mike Sharp, and actually, as a joke, I always play on a friend of mine when we used to work for companies and there's a deputy board, email each other, and he and I were both big wrestling fans. The one thing I always say to him, I said, Jeff, I'm writing an article
hospital, and
my friend Bennett found out about it, and he goes, your friend and the little boy, does he like wrestling? I said, yeah, sure. He goes, okay. And next thing I know, here come autograph pictures from, like, some of the Dudley boys and Afa and all these guys. And Afa actually told Ben to, when the boy feels well enough, he gets to Afa, I'll drive down to Alabama and visit him. And unfortunately, we never got to do it. But that's just you can see me Afa lost on as a horrible, sad kid and this and that. But what a tremendous gentleman. And my friend got to welcome him. He never met Yokozuna, because Yokozuna had passed away before he got the job. But he met the guy like Rakiti and a couple of the other Samoans and, Afa and Sika, obviously, and, some of the other guys. He never met The Rock. You know, The Rock just being so busy, but it's still pretty cool that he got to do all that.
Oh, yeah. I will tell you this. And by the way, just an opinion on being, Samoans, incredible talents. But, fellas, if I know my heritage is going to tend toward large ass, as a Samoan, so I don't think I'm going into a profession where I'm going to wear any kind of thing. Okay, I never think of that. Samoan's the first one to put their ass right out there for everybody, and it's, not glory, but unbelievable. I will tell you this. There have been an incredible number, and there's a good number of them in pro wrestling today. What happened to Sheldon Benjamin, by the way? You've got all the greats like Baron Von Raschke, Jim Raschke wrestled at Nebraska, an NCAA champion. Vern Gagne, Bob Geigel, these guys all wrestled collegiately. And
Bob Backlund,
absolutely. So, I mean, these are just samples. And then you have today's modern era wrestlers like Brock Lesnar, Shelton Benjamin, and
Kurt Angle.
Well, Angle's maybe above and beyond. I think we technically lost Kurt, period. I think enough chair shots to the face. I could sit and talk to him for 5 hours and he won't remember anything that we said. That's not a slam on Kurt, it's a slam on the business, because it really does physically, emotionally damage you to the point where you cannot come back. So it's similar to being punch drunk and you're self-medicating, doing your best to hide the pain and hide yourself from the loneliness.
So I think the Kurt Angle situation actually let people know that, it's so commonplace now that HGH and these guys getting prescriptions for it, and he got cleared of all charges, even though they found a bag full of it in his car,
Yeah.
Probably way too much for one person to have, and he's got a prescription for it, so he gets cleared.
It's no different than any other professional sport, fellas. I think we have to look at pro sports and the good and the bad. We enjoy it because it's entertainment. At least that's how we've been conditioned. Pro football is one of the greatest dirty secrets in professional sports. The number of head injuries, the book that Christopher Nowinski wrote about the head injuries in collegiate football, high school football, pro football, is an immeasurable number. The number of concussions per Sunday in the NFL is incredible. These guys who are 38, 39, 40 years old can't walk. Their hips are bad. Their knees are bad. They're beyond repair. Their heads, they can't beat themselves, some of these guys. And the NFL has not protected them from themselves. They've fed the machine, and the machine is mad. Is that right? Corporate America says this because they're not paying attention to the problems. In professional wrestling, we had the exact same thing. It's one of the reasons I've tumbled so swiftly to collegiate wrestling, and even international wrestling, because the lack of blows to the head is comparatively small, or I should say the number of blows to the head is considerably smaller, whether you're falling back on a mat and you're receiving a strike, and if Bert does it, maybe you're not permanently damaged unless you look at the hip angle.
I hate to be devil's advocate, but I did remember reading a few months ago there was a study done that showed wrestling has actually become the number one sport of injuries in college, at least, I believe it was. I don't know about
high school. I didn't see that study.
But I do remember getting that at one point and going, I don't know if I trust that, because I remember when I was in high school, my coach always telling me that wrestling is one of the safest sports. And I saw that study was done. I mean, I wish I could pull it right up right now, but
I would appreciate if you'd send it to me so I could call it easy out, because I would disagree with it first and foremost.
How can you beat football for history? You can't. I mean, baseball, how many bad
going over to CH5, which is the number, I think, in the number of scholarships, 83 or 85 in college.
Yeah, I'll try to track that down.
So, no, please just look at what he says.
So I'm going to move in, because I've talked to, like, Harry Colline, you know, a lot of my, and I have, like, a lot of, some of my roommates were, you know, former high school wrestlers, and they were having, you know, problems with any, you know, head injury, serious, you know, concussion injuries like that. Arms twisted a little bit, or some cauliflower ears. And the one guy I actually interviewed was a roommate of mine, was a former high school wrestler. He said, you know, his biggest thing was, you know, he was one of those guys who just went overboard with the weight cutting.
Yeah, see, we changed that, though. We've
changed that.
We're no longer cutting weight as much as we are managing. We're going to remember that you guys have to weigh in. That weight has to be put into a computer, into the program that is authorized for the NCAA to monitor. You can only lose a small percentage of body weight day to day, week to week, match to match. And then you have to certify at your weight. You have to be within, you know, a very small amount to actually weigh in and qualify. It is so well monitored these days that an athlete is wrestling closer to his natural weight than ever before. And we have to endorse that, folks, because in no way, shape, or form is weight cutting healthy for the human body. Weight management is something we must do to be responsible to each other throughout our daily lives. We have to be, because that's how you're, you know, that's what affects your heart, your cardiovascular system. What we put in our bodies, the world we live in is terrible in how we treat ourselves with what we eat. And it's actually atrocious.
Because like I said, by this group now, that's what you're saying, they're obviously way much more advanced from when I was in college, so 12, 15 years ago. And I think that friend was a roommate of mine. His high school tenure, which he graduated high school in 1995, so he was telling me, well, he cut his down the whole time, was, yeah, I was out of this for all.
Well, John Gotti is weighing much less than he was when he was walking around on planet Earth. I just thought I'd bring that up. And he's worth considerably less money, too.
I just heard that his wife and family got evicted from their luxurious mansion.
Well, you know, what's sad is that it never should belong to them in the first place, but you know what? Thieves will be thieves, right? Hang on, just a second. I'm getting myself a Zion here. Hang on. No, I'm good now. Thank you. Okay. Having a little energy.
Yeah, right. Okay. Anyway, I didn't find that study. It was a high school study, and I didn't say that it surpassed football, but I guess it's the top two are football and injury risks. It says football and
I wonder what you could draw as far as a correlation in that story, that article, supposed to study. I wonder if you could draw a correlation to wrestling being the third fastest growing sport in some areas and fourth in some areas of high school offerings. There's got to be some kind of a correlation. But I will tell you this, our wrestling coaches from high school to college are better trained to monitor the bodies of our young athletes and their growth. You've got to remember, the young men are still growing, even the young women. We have more young women wrestling in America today than ever before by a long shot. You realize there are 9,000 kids wrestling in the state of Texas, and I think it's fully one-third of them are female. And I may be off a little bit there, but women's wrestling around the country is growing at such a rapid pace. And if you want to know how to grow men's wrestling and men's and women's at the same time, and they're both untouchable,
they actually look at the thing that I put up in my combat sports links every day about a meet that was held recently. I forget where, but it was all women, all wrestling teams were all women. That's the first I've ever heard of that.
We have schools, there are championships, state championships in Hawaii, California, Texas. We have great college programs in Tennessee, Kentucky. The Dakotas, there's a big tournament coming up in the Dakotas called the Can-Am. Yeah, the Can-Am Connection. We'll go back. But women's wrestling right now is on such a growth spurt. And once you watch it and you start following a program, a college, a club, is another great area of growth in wrestling right now. There's the National College Wrestling Association. It has 153 programs in it. And it has grown in 13 years to 153 from none. And they expect to be fully at 300. Now, these are programs that are unfunded, run by generally volunteer coaches that have full-time, daytime jobs, and they draw down student activity funds from the school that they are, you know, if they have 40 athletes, they're owed so much money, or eligible, I should say, for so much money, and it could be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, and they're competing on a national level. So, you know, we've got a lot of growth in wrestling, and I wish boxing would do the same thing, because I think as long as you have that, you know, same mentality, the silver or golden gloves, when you're boxing and you've got headgear on and there's some element of protection, and people realize that you need that protection unless you're professional. It's like wearing headgear in wrestling. You wear it for a reason. I think we would see boxing start to grow again, because boxing has had some incredible athletes incredible athletes. Muhammad Ali may be one of the greats for overall physical fitness when he was in his prime. But you see what boxing did to him, elevating his diseases very, very quickly.
When we were talking about injury, I forgot to mention that there was a study done that said mixed martial arts tends to have more concussions, but long-term brain injury boxing has been beat by a long shot.
Oh, yeah. Listen, when you're in boxing, you get hit by the big gloves. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 over and over and over again. These guys are tough. We just retired a gentleman here in Iowa. The boxing or the athletic commission asked if we would be so kind to allow time in the ring. He wore his tuxedo, and he brought in his belts, his retired champion. And we retired him, but I could not understand the thing the man said. And he's not that old. He's probably about the same age I am, which is relatively young in dog years. I would just say that, you know, we we owe him better than that. We must treat each other, I think, with more respect and help each other protect ourselves, because a lot of us fight for glory. A lot of us work for glory, and it's, I think it's misdirected. And our youth is not necessarily misdirected, as we're constantly chasing the dream. It's kind of like cocaine. And let me tell you what, fellas, that first hit off of a pipe of, you know, a crack pipe is your best hit. It's everyone that follows, you know, you're trying to achieve. And the studies will tell you this is true, that you're chasing that initial high. It's never the same. Unless you take a couple weeks off. I want to go back to something you're talking about Lock Haven. Lock Haven has, and there's a lot of good athletes out of Pennsylvania, but Lock Haven has Jamie Varner as of late, one of the most recent champions and stars of mixed martial arts to come out of the world of wrestling and to elevate himself. And he's a nice guy. I just want to throw that out there because I think Lock Haven in the last couple of years has declined, but it hasn't been because of the kids. I think it's been part administration, part coaching, part community, and I think Lock Haven and that town, USA, deserves better than that. I just want to throw that out there.
I don't know Jamie that well personally. I know his medical frontline. He was the national boxing champion for Lock Haven University. There was a stretch where I used to go to the Grand One show here. I used to go to that show every year after I graduated, looking at 99, 2000, at least 2001, I would say. But then I hit stretch from like 06, 07, and 08. The week that they would have it, it was here in February, we would get hit by just a blinding snowstorm, and it was not easy for me to drive 3 hours. So up to like even 100 miles, across the street, it's wicked up there. I was able to make it up. Some of the photo photos are still there. I made him up. I think he's a freshman at the time, and he did me well. And then next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call. Like, hey, remember Jamie? Don't know that one. Like, hey, he's fighting in the world of mixed martial arts now. Like, and he contributes a lot of it to his background of boxing. He's another guy that's a funny check to put in the Mike Sutton Levitch.
That's always doing very well.
So Mike, Big Mike actually was a boxer when I was there. And he decided to broke on his wrestling team and the boxing team. He broke on the basketball. And the boxing person that we got with broke on, but I was the guy that recruited him. I was, kind of the assistant coach. And he was ready to graduate. They wanted to kind of hang out with one of our other coaches that passed away. And I was kind of doing this point, got my diploma. And I recruited my team to still go to this. And they kind of said, well, listen, you got to choose. You can either go with the wrestling, you can go with the boxing. And he kind of saw where if he's going to be a successful wrestler there, you have a chance of scholarship. And that's kind of what he decided to go for. And he went there, did very well. And the Mike Sutton was a former Lock Haven guy. Jamie Varner is a former Lock Haven guy. So it's like, kind of sometimes, you feel you're proud because you're sitting here just doing so well.
Mike Sutton Levitch, let me say this about Mike. Let's see. Mikey has been very patient with his career. He's one hell of a great teacher, school teacher, an educator. And I'm very proud of him that, but he's been very patient with his management of Money Cox and getting shots. Has he been always handed the right shots? No. I don't think he's been treated totally fair. He's had his, a great training background with Pat Belichick's company over in the Quad Cities, which is pretty well evaporated over the last year. With Spencer Fisher breaking off and Jen Spover breaking off and all the guys that, it really was their core, Matt Hughes, et cetera. So Mike Sutton-Levitch has not necessarily gotten the greatest shakes in the world, but he is a gentleman, he's a father, a husband, he's a good man. I've announced him in a couple of events. I would just say this, that if we had more Mikey C's and we had more Jamie Barnes and we had more Couture's and people out of the world of wrestling that appreciate how
much invested in emotionally and throw it down the toilet. Don King's done a great job with that in boxing. I just don't want to see that happen to our sport of mixed martial arts that involves so many of our wrestlers. This has been a huge boon to wrestlers, college and international wrestlers, financially, and I want to see that continue. These guys deserve it. A lot of them have been wrestling since they're 3, 4, 5 years old, and it's time for them to get paid some way, some shape, somehow, and if it's not from a gold, silver, or bronze medal, for God's sake, let it be in the form of cash or a check.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, Dana White and the UFC are notorious for giving fighters chump change unless they're real main event type guys who have exclusive contracts. And, you know, part of the reason why so many fighters have so many different sponsors, and now the sponsor arrangement is even different in the UFC, was because the fighter pay wasn't very good. And, you know, these guys in the UFC, it might not be such a bad thing, I think, if they get some growing pains and they have to really compete with their competition for once. And right now, I think it's starting to happen because of all the injuries you see across the UFC. And then you've got Strikeforce just picked up Fedor, and that was an incredible fight with Rogers. You know, it really showed me that Fedor can be tested.
But the UFC still held the cards when it came to the ratings on Spike. They still dominated young men 18-34. I mean, Spike, when they first started the Ultimate Fighter, Spike wasn't going to promote it. Dana raised hell. Well, you know, I wouldn't have been wanted to be on the end of Dana's, control. But at the same time, he was right. You know, he absolutely was right. I remember in the early days sitting in his office with, you know, that thing was the middleweight championship belt over my shoulder and holding prototypes of video games and him telling my old partner Scott and I that this is the future and we're going to beat the WWF and we're going to be on prime time. And quite frankly, I didn't believe him, but I didn't know how feverish he was going to, you know, pursue this. And he worked night and day to make it happen. He really did. They were listed a ton of money. And right before Spike, they almost shut the door. It was close.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he gets as much credit as he does criticism, I think, at times. But, you know, there's a lot of bad qualities to his good. So, I mean, he's just one of those, what do they call it, they always use it in politics. It's a figure, a polarizing figure, I guess. They say he's one of those guys, and that's sometimes it's fortunate for the sport, but a lot of times it's unfortunate. I think, like, you know, like I was saying earlier, when he was ranting and raving about how, you know, you don't pull out of a fight if you're injured, you know, or if you're slightly injured, you know, you come here to fight, you got to fight. You know, he says those type of things, and meanwhile, you know, he's got 5 or 6 different main event fighters who can't fight right now because of injury, and some of them have had to pull out of fights. You know, that kind of thing, I think, would be better off, you know, not part of his repertoire. You know, maybe there's a good reason why the other Fertitta came over, Lorenzo, and maybe they should give him a little bit more responsibility and give him the money.
No, he came over because he needed money. Let's face it, he's not exceedingly busy in the casino business.
Yeah, so he did sell his house too, I guess. $3 million house.
I don't think they're hurting for cash as much as their company, maybe the casino end of it. But you know, these guys are very, very smart. They are business people. They're surrounded by exceedingly sharp attorneys and corporate minds that help them arrive at their decisions. They don't just wake up in the middle of the night and say, "You know what? I'm going to screw 350 investors out of millions of dollars." But I'm going to buy up science because it's threatening my livelihood. They buy up because of ultimate control. Do you, either one of you guys, think honestly that the Fertittas would do well by turning over any percentage of the UFC to a partner or any kind of public control? In other words, a public offering. I don't personally. What are your thoughts?
Well, if it's somebody that they can control themselves, that just is a cash cow that wants to look good and say that they're an ownership partner, and they're really not, you know, they're just a stooge in the corner, then, you know, I think they would benefit from it, and they need it. That's why they just took out another $100 million loan. They're getting to the point where they're overbuilt, you know. Every show that's not in Vegas costs money, you know, and it makes money too, but at the same time, they're paying off debt. You know, so they're getting to that point where they're gonna be over leveraged, and they might not be able to sustain that debt. You know, they're still, everybody says, oh, they're a billion-dollar company because of that one Forbes article that came out about the UFC, and they valued them at $1 billion. No expert coming in and saying they're worth that much. It was just an out-there figure. So now I think it's convinced the Fertittas and Dana White that they are actually worth $1 billion, and they can leverage the company for that much. And they're already $400 million in the hole, from what I know of. You know, I don't know if there's anything other, you know, credit instruments out there, but I'm sure there are. Could be under different company names or whatever. But these guys are now in the bankruptcy situation of Station Casinos. They're facing banks, and banks have unlimited resources as far as attorneys go. You know, just open the vault for the paycheck, you know.
These are kids, smart corporate minds will build a company and rob it blind until such a time as they can afford to leave it and let it go.
Right.
You know, that there's no secret.
I would think that rather than sell 15% of it, you're going to see a situation unfold maybe within the next year or two where the Fertittas actually start seriously shopping around selling the whole thing.
Well, but... But, Jim, and it's not the 15%, and it's not the sale of the company that's, you got to look at the whole picture, how much are they draining from it now in cash and receipts? How much are they taking away now as a repayment for their kindness of the past and their leadership? How much are they taking away now? We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. These relationships with Budweiser and Harley Davidson, companies like this, are legitimately at the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
You know, when their fighters are restricted, they can't hold up a budget.
Like whatever the UFC as a whole got for that video game that came out,
right.
I mean, it had to be good money because Dana White was willing to throw people into the bus and out of his league if they didn't sign over the rights for it.
For a period of time until, you know, like Randy Couture comes to his senses and says, hey, you know, all right, Dana, I've had enough. I'm going to live out my contract, and I'd sure like to resign again with a great bonus, which is, you know, finally he got what he deserved in his bonus. But we leave ourselves open. A lot of times our egos allow us to make decisions that are not necessarily in our best interest. I've been guilty of that many times in my career, and I'm sure I'll be guilty of it again.
Bill Belichick was guilty of it last Sunday.
So is Bill Bellamy, but that's a whole different story. Fellas, I tell you what, I have enjoyed this conversation for well over an hour, but I know that Saturday I must talk for at least 12 hours. It's going to be a very long day as we broadcast the Horizon Open. And then Sunday, the 2.5 to 3 hours of the All-Star Classic, it's going to be an incredible event. I sure hope you guys tune in. I really, truly do. Here's your unadulterated plug. Tune in to Takedown Wrestling Radio for, I'm not going to say the greatest coverage because I don't believe we do the best that we possibly can. I believe we do the best to our ability that day. I sure would like to do better. But this is coverage of the oldest sport known to man. And it is wrestling, collegiate wrestling in this case. And you're going to see some of the greatest athletes in the country. Or you're about to see them. You're about to watch them. But you'll hear us talk about them as well. So we invite you to tune in. We go on the air 7 a.m. Pacific time Saturday morning, and we won't shut up until about 9 o'clock.
All right. Well, with a voice like that, I'm sure a lot of people don't mind that. You know?
Oh, no. Believe me, Dave, my wife, she's grateful when I go on the road. In fact, she encourages me to go on the road now.
Yeah.
She's one of the smart ones. So, but can we do it again sometime?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, God bless you. Anytime we can talk about boxing, pro wrestling, college wrestling, international wrestling, mixed martial arts, and any number of things, and I get to talk to...
There's not too many people out there in this world with the kind of range you have on those topics.
I'll tell you what, I love the fact that we have common interest and common ground, and no matter what we say about anybody on our programs, I want the best for everybody in the world of combat sports, because these are some of the greatest athletes, some incredible people, and I just want to see them do well with their lives and be happy. The bottom line is, you know, for me, I'm real happy with what I do in my life, and I'm going to struggle to keep doing better. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're in the entertainment business. I'm going to clean out the barn, hang some drapes, and throw a show.
Yeah.
And that's my greatest Judy Garland on here, but that's what we do. We throw fights, we throw wrestling events, we announce football and basketball and soccer. My God, it's fun to be in sports entertainment. It truly is.
You got it.
Hope you guys have a great evening. And Rich, thanks for, you're going to be putting our TV show up on your site, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Well, I think I can't wait. But make sure you let me know so I can post that as one of our affiliates on our site, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. God bless you guys and have a great evening. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
All right, Kyle.
Oh, believe me, I could talk for another couple hours, but that'd be exhausting for tomorrow.
Have a good one, guys.
You too.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
So that was Scott Casper and Tony. I bet you don't know, but you've heard his voice before. You might not listen to Takedown Radio, but I bet you've heard his voice dozens of times before.
Okay. Any questions?
Welcome to Fight News Unlimited. Experience the best fight news on the net. Stop by unlimitedfightnews.com today and take advantage of everything Fight News Unlimited has to offer.
That was our old intro. That's him. That's that guy.
Oh,
that's how far we go back.
Wow.
He did that for us. So we have about 14 minutes to go through the rest of the schedule coming up for boxing and mixed martial arts. Obviously, there's another UFC event coming up this weekend, UFC 106 already. Boxing, I noticed there's not too much going on. That's superstar out there. I know that there's a big super middleweight super six tournament, but I wanted to mention a couple Friday things. Your boy and one of my boys, as far as locales anyway, hometown kids and friends are fighting on Friday. The Twin River Event Center, Danny O'Connor, show 9-0, is fighting James Hope 4-2. And the main event there is Joe McCree versus Otis Griffin. No titles on the line there, but just
Joe McCree, I've heard the name. Otis Griffin was the champ of the. He was the winner of the next great champ. He has to go to the Warriors series, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
The other one that I'm sure you'd like to know about, if you don't already, the light heavyweight fight, Chuck Masaccio and Bobby Roode is going on Friday night. Atlantic City, New Jersey. And it's on the undercard of Prince Badi Ajamu, 27-3 with 15 knockouts, and Daniel Judah, 23-4.
I knew Badi was fighting this weekend. Like I said on the show before, I haven't heard him since Brown Hollows. He's not out of focus with Ben Mine from Rock Haven in the finals of the night. He's got to go to he has a position lost to Roy Jones and went to 4 rounds with him. And Bonnie was going to retire, and then he decided to come back. He's a nice guy, a young gentleman. And he said, I didn't know Chuck's going to come to this particular conference as our first professional loss. He's going to try to get back on the winning track again.
Yep, and then we have a couple of interesting fights going on south of the border in Argentina. Marcos Rene Maidana, 26-1, 25 knockouts, is fighting for the interim WA World Light Welterweight title with William Gonzalez, who's 22-5.
And you took another knockdown on Victor Ortiz, right? Madonna?
Must be, because I definitely recognize that name.
Yeah, he went to Swanson with Ortiz, I think, is fighting coming up soon. And,
the whole other card in Argentina, same day, Saturday, it says it's going to be on HBO, Jorge Rodrigo Barrios, 48-4 with one draw and 34 knockouts, versus Michael Lozada, 33-5, one draw, 26 knockouts. That's for the vacant IBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. And Lucas Martin Matisse is 24-0 with 22 knockouts. He's fighting for the WBO Latino Light Welterweight title. He's fighting Florencio Castellano, 16-3 on that same card. And just going to page and throw here.
about this, I guess. Giacomo Fragomini is fighting on Saturday in Germany. 26-1-1 with 10 knockouts versus Zolt Erde, 30-0, 17 knockouts with the WBC Cruiserweight title.
This generation spent on Zolt Germany. It's not good for him to feel punished by Horst Jones and being offered people now in Germany. What could possibly be better than what was their home fucking country? Almost sure. That's why he spent on so much. He's from Berlin, Germany. I don't know if he's a challenger to the title. Or if you're a challenger, you should have to fight the champion on his terms. But he was the number one contender. I remember Charles Brewer, who a lot of people was putting on the archery here, was the champion of the world. And he's coming up together, like, don't you got to fight over in a tummy? That bullshit. So I ripped off. Then it was like a mandatory rematch. Well, Aki had a vote, gets on the fight now. So he can't ripped off again. That's the last thing. That's my deal with them. Not leave Germany.
Right. Well, also we have, on Saturday in Mexico, Edgar Sosa, 37-5 with 21 knockouts, fighting for the WBC light flyweight title with Rodel Mayol. Then, of course, the Mikael Kessler versus Andre Ward fight is upon us at the Oracle Arena in Oakland on Saturday.
Yes, right. I mean, it's Ward's speed against Kessler's, you know, pressure, really.
Kessler's got kind of an edge on the experience there. 42 fights, one draw, one loss, and 32 knockouts to Andre's 20 wins and only 13 knockouts. I don't have time for it, but Joe Calzaghe, interestingly enough, has a promotion now, and he has lined up the most ultimate collection of bumps you've ever seen in your life. It's like the mismatch of the month on every fight. It's unbelievable. But we'll have to save that for another show. Until his next card. But I thought it would be interesting to mention, we talked about Sean Porter last week before the Pacquiao fight, and he was one of the main sparring partners of Pacquiao to prepare him for Cotto. And Sean Porter's in action in Mississippi Saturday, like middleweight. He's 2-0 8 knockouts. He's fighting Jerome Ellis, who's 12-9-2. So he's still kind of building his record.
I've seen Ellis fight.
I think I saw a press release about this. From what it sounded like, Ellis is one of those guys that his record doesn't speak for itself. He's only got one knockout of those 9 losses, so you know he takes the decision a lot, and he does have quite a bit of fight, so he's got that experience factor. But Porter is pretty well known now. Guy. I mean, he's
kind of reminds me of the whole Abe Rudiger. There's another incident where a kid was famous for being the GOAT of that show. Way back, I forget what episode it was or what season it was, but there was a show where this kid had a pound to lose before the fight. He was in the sauna, and he gave up on it and ended up collapsing and going to the hospital. And, of course, you know, Dana White just shredded him a new one, you know, into his face and you know, afterwards and you know, in the press and everything. The kid never came back from it. He still does MMA, but, you know, he's never been at that level again. But this is a different story. You know, this kid came from the NFL. He's a proven athlete. He just he was in a fight, and it was a rough fight. They were both teeing off on each other. They had no defense, and that's one of the reasons why I'm saying that there's no boxing in MMA. But MMA fighters typically suck at boxing for some reason. You know, but here Dana White is inside the organization. He's trying to cultivate these people, and he's shitting on them at the same time. He's telling Brock Lesnar his secrets. He's you know, bad-mouthing Big Country Roy Nelson before he even has an official UFC fight. And this is somebody who's going to be fighting for him. You know, and then he's saying all this stuff about Rampage Jackson. He left. And now you got these controversial decisions starting to come out, with the most recent one being UFC 105. I mean, Randy Couture, I didn't really ask Scott about this, but I wanted to. I don't think he won that fight, and the judges just gave it to him. And, you know, he's their big marquee guy, and I think, if I'm not, remember correctly, that's supposed to be his last fight with the UFC. That was, like, the third in his contract that he was supposed to come back for, because he had that dispute, that legal dispute, where he was holding out, and he decided to come back and live out his contract. And I think that was his last fight of his contract. I'm not sure, but it seems to me, by my calculation, it's got to be, if not the second to last, it's definitely the last. But anyway, all that aside, I just wish Dana White would stop shitting on his talent and go back to shitting on the opposition like he usually does. Or something. Anything.
I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist or whatever you call that, to read by what people are thinking. But Dana White had a massive, massive ego problem. And he was like, when Don King was really controlling, like, you know, most of boxing back about, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And he was like, you know, the main promoter. Well, Don King was basically the gentleman, you know, he was his own best attraction. And to do business, you had to go with him, or he was going to blackball you. And that's like Dana White thing. Like, and Don King was like, if one of his fighters lost, so literally, and I told you before, when I think it was Michael Dukes that got knocked out, he stepped over his prone body, greets a new champion, and basically, you know, kiss his ass, you know, go with the guy that you were kissing his ass when you walked in the ring. He's unconscious now. He stepped on your elbow. But that's what Dana White would do. He doesn't care about these people. He cares about what they can do for him. And, like, basically, like, with Brock Lesnar right now, say he comes up, and basically what I found out most about Brock Lesnar, I got off a wrestling website that was doing some reporting about it. But say he comes down, and Brock Lesnar has this horrible thing, and actually he could be potentially fatal. Dana White will rip the shit out of him because basically he's now useless to him. And that's the thing. Like, why should I even give two shits about him anymore? He's basically useless. That is the kind of guy he is.
And, you know, the UFC is notorious for not paying their fighters as well as they should. We talked about earlier. And, you know, these guys are going to face enough criticism from, you know, the general public when they're on this Ultimate Fighter show and they lose or, you know, something happens. You know, and then after, when they see the show, and after they've been on it, and they see what, you know, people are saying about them behind their back. I mean, that's a lot to go through. That's a lot to put yourself through. At the same time, you're putting yourself out there as a fighter to get punched in the head. And,
right.
You know, a guy like Dana White, coming from a background where he's never really fought in a big fight in his life, and it just is more of an insult, I think, for him to go out there and trick you.
Here's the downside, right?
Yeah.
That's what, in the boxing world, here's what boxing's going to call the run back again. And you might think I'm crazy rich, but I'm going to tell you what. The screws don't allow promotions now. It's not that sort of thing. Promotions. Once you reach out to your promotion, you know, here's the other one, just give them promotion. You know, these guys want to start doing it on their own. And they're saying, like, you know, fuck you, the Bob Adams and the Don Kings and all that. Bob Adams, you ever touch him in his life? No. He was, like, off the Harvard. You know, just got a lot of money his whole life.
He's an Al Wild to me now. He's just akin to Al Wild type of figure now that I know that Pacquiao only hit 26%.
Al Wild.
He's worse than Al Wild.
Yeah.